saw you in here for a little bit.
Yeah, then I said, well, I gotta. Okay, the mic's on. Good afternoon. I'll call to order the meeting of the State Government Budget Division for Wednesday, January 10th, 2007. Let the record reflect we have a quorum present, and this is our first meeting of the 2007 legislative session of this budget division. I do want to welcome everybody here. We have a rather unusual situation because all the members who are serving on this budget division are new to the division, including myself. We don't have anybody who's on this division that had been on the last few years, so that is a bit of a change. You don't see that very often around here. But I had previously served on this budget division from 1997 to 2000 when Senator Price had it, so I've got a little bit of familiarity with it.
Senator Pappas? The division in the House.
In the House. So you've got some familiarity with it, too. But as far as any recent knowledge, as far as the members go, we're all a little bit new here. I do want to introduce some of the support personnel who will be working with us. To my left is Carolyn LaViolette. She is my legislative assistant, and she is the secretary of the Budget Division. Kathleen Lonergan was my first legislative assistant, and then she was Senator Price's committee administrator when he chaired this budget division, so she's got some working knowledge of this. Senate counsel and our fiscal analyst, Senate counsel Tom Bodern, and the fiscal analyst is Kevin Lundin, and they've been on this for a couple of years, I believe, so they certainly are quite well experienced. And then support staff, who do we have? Ellen Perot from Senate Majority Research. Do we have any other support staff around? I don't see them right now, but we'll introduce them as they come. So feel free to make use of the staff, my own staff, and the Senate staff for anything that you need on this budget division. We've provided to the members just a list of the jurisdictions of all the budget divisions, so you can kind of see which ones. We're on the right-hand side, the list of the areas that we have oversight for, but you can kind of compare what the other budget divisions have as well, too, so you can kind of see what other people are going to be, what we do and what we do not do. It is my hope that we're going to be able to once we actually get some budget proposals coming, the governor is going to make his recommendations once we get the budget books, and we start having review of the budget to actually take some votes or get some feeling where we are on it, because it's a little hard to just have somebody come and make a presentation here, and then we come back 2 months later, look at some spreadsheets, and nobody can quite remember some things. So since we all got to have fresh eyes on this area, I certainly hope that we can ask good questions, get a sense of where we're going, and then know what we want and what we don't want as we put the budget together.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Cooley.
Do you know what that the initials stand for about halfway down our list? The CAA?
That is the Capital Area Planning Board.
Oh, okay.
Architectural Plan. And Senator Rest, were you on that?
Yes, I am.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
You currently are on it. And they are have the jurisdiction over the grounds of the Capitol.
Okay, thank you.
It's even actually, Mr. Chairman.
And more than the Capitol, by the
Senator,
way. Yes,
Senator Cooley, there is a Capitol District, and they act as a planning board and a zoning board and just about anything else.
Okay.
Approval for example, a new parking ramp across from Regents Hospital had to be approved by the CAP board. A new sign outside of Sears had to be approved by the CAP board, and signage in some of the downtown area that's closest to us, as well as the Capitol building itself, which is separate from the Capitol architect, but which is their own person, their members on it, and then we have an advisory group of engineers and architects.
Okay. Well, thank you. Just one I wasn't acquainted with.
And I've also provided to you a letter that was sent by the governor to me and to this budget division because there is a requirement that any interagency agreements involving the governor's office, we have to be informed of. And information that's provided to me, I will provide to you so that we all have the same information as we make these decisions. And it's certainly my hope and expectation to include Senator Roebling as the Republican lead on this budget division, to keep her involved in what we're doing here, so that we can all at least, you know, work together to produce the bill that we will be doing later on in the session. I should note, as you know, we meet on Mondays and Wednesdays. Next Monday is a holiday, a Dr. Martin Luther King birthday, so we will not be meeting. Obviously, there will be no Senate meetings on Monday. Next Wednesday, a week from today, the governor is scheduled to give his State of the State address. But that would take about half an hour, something like that. So we will meet about 30 minutes afterwards, and then we'll have a presentation on some of the planned improvements to the Capitol that are being recommended, and including updating some 40-year-old ductwork and wiring and just a lot of things. And we're actually going to go then down to the basement and take a look at some of this stuff to see, you get a firsthand look of some of the things that need to be done in this building here. So just so you know what's coming up in the future. Today, we've invited, as I say, we don't really have budget issues yet. We will have them soon. But some of the issues that we're going to be dealing with in the budget, we can certainly talk about from a policy standpoint right now. And we asked Commissioner Dana Badgerow from the Department of Administration to talk about the governor's Drive to Excellence program. And then we'll also be having an overview of the Office of Enterprise Technology, because these programs have broad implications throughout many state agencies and the state budget. And so I think we need to get an understanding of what they are and what they do. And then we'll wrap it up with Mr. Lundeen giving just a background of our areas in the budget division here. So, Commissioner Badgerow, are you? I saw her earlier. There you are. Okay, in front of me. Welcome to the budget division, and you'll need to identify yourself for the record since they're taping this. And welcome.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dana Badgerow. I'm the commissioner of the Department of Administration, but I also serve as the chair of the governor's subcabinet on the Drive to Excellence. For some of you, that may be a new, relatively new program or concept. This is a program, it is the centerpiece of the governor's reform efforts. It is about 2 years old now. We're into the, just about winding up our second year of implementation. And it is a comprehensive state government reform effort with many, many facets. And I want to try in a very overview way today, go through each of those facets, although I will be followed by Gopal Khanna, our state chief information officer, who will go into more depth. Many of the reforms are in the information technology area, and he will review those. This is the original intent of the Drive to Excellence. I think we all know that citizens are impatient and demand more from us. After all, they can do their banking and their holiday shopping online and have instant access to any number of services, and they're beginning to expect the same thing from state government. Obviously, they want those same services or more, and they want them more efficiently. At the time the Drive to Excellence was initiated, we were under some severe budgetary pressures, which is not to say that we aren't currently still under budgetary pressures, because no program that I am aware of ever really has quite enough money to do what it thinks it needs to do. So we always need to free up money for frontline services whenever we can. And then I'm going to go into this in a little more detail, but we are faced with a real demographic challenge in the state of Minnesota with our workforce. And it is this. The state demographer provides us these data. And originally they were provided us data that about 44% of all state government employees will be eligible to retire by 2015. Well, that's too far out for me to think about, and so I asked for the same data to be arrayed just until 2010, which is really just around the corner. And all agencies, 26% of all state employees will be eligible for retirement. That is, they will have reached the rule of 90 or will be at age 60, which is the average age of retirement, by 2010. And some agencies are considerably more senior than others. As you'll notice, the Employment Economic Development, 2 out of 5 employees is eligible to retire very shortly. So as you look through state government, we are going to be facing, whether we like it or not, with a massive exodus of talent and wisdom and knowledge about how state government runs. So we have two choices. We can either try to continue to have fewer and fewer people do the same amount of work, or we can essentially reform the way we do work. So there, these are the goals of the Drive to Excellence. Greater service. If we can reduce those, some people call them back office or business support service transactional costs, that frees up money for things that really count, K through 12 and roads and other kinds of public services. We can put those resources on the things that are important, and at the same time we can take advantage of new technologies and not continue to do things manually in the same old way. We do need to improve our business processes. All organizations do, and state government is no different. And as I said, we must prepare for the workforce changes. So just a little snapshot of the history of the Drive to Excellence. As I said, we're almost 2 years old now. In the fall of 2004, a massive study was undertaken involving about 200 state employees and a consultant who did a number of surveys. They surveyed all of our information technology resources. Where are these resources sitting? How many are there? How many different networks, servers, email systems, other kinds of software programs? They also then generated a number of ideas. They took surveys, narrative surveys, as well as numerical surveys of all agencies, and generated ideas. There were about 400, give or take, really good ideas for how we could change things. We had to sift those and collate them and then prioritize them. And from those 400, we narrowed it down and collectively put together about 24 business cases for change. Actually, six of those business cases for change, we couldn't do them all at once, so the governor selected six to initiate in April of 2005, and he did that with some executive orders and a reorganization order. The reorganization order affected building codes. Right about that same time, we initiated legislation which was passed, which created the Office of Enterprise Technology. Prior to that time, information technology was largely fragmented in each agency with a very small policy office in the Department of Administration, which dealt with IT policy, and then an operational office within administration as well, which ran some of the mainframe applications. Those were spun out of the Department of Administration, and this new cabinet-level agency was created. Then those six projects have now been since supplemented by two more, and there are many more on the roadmap, so I want to go through those. But before I do, I want to just give you a diagram or a visual of what the Drive to Excellence is really all about. If you look at these, I'll call them silos, these vertical diagrams here on the right, on the left side, that's the way agencies are currently organized. There's a commissioner with agency-specific functions. They all tend to do their own procurement, their own finance, their own information technology and human resources. We all do our own employee training and orientation. Everyone kind of does it. I've sometimes called it the Burger King way. I'll do it my way. And what we're trying to do is get people to think outside of their silos, at least in terms of the business functions, and take those and look at them and slice them a different way. By slicing them a different way, we come to things called utility functions, functions that are more or less vanilla. You should be indifferent as to where they're provided for your agency, as long as they're provided efficiently and effectively. And then there are shared functions that may be shared amongst a cluster of agencies, and then there are the agency-specific functions. Let me be really clear that the Drive to Excellence does not attempt to rationalize or otherwise change those agency-specific functions. Some reform efforts in the past have tried to tinker with or amalgamate or otherwise reform the direct delivery of service, and that is not what the Drive to Excellence is all about. So let's get into the projects, if I can. I'm going to take, first of all, the one that's completed, on which we've declared success. The building code consolidation occurred actually in May of 2005 by taking five separate building code and oversight agencies and combining them in one in the Department of Labor and Industry. The biggest one was the Building Codes and Standards Division of the Department of Administration. But the Board of Electricity, Plumbing and Pipe Fitting, Water, and so forth were all consolidated from other departments as well. So those have been now co-located in one physical location for almost, as I said, about almost 2 years now. So what they're now doing is rationalizing their processes. They're coming up with common systems. So for a building contractor, there is one stop for all building code issues. Formerly, there were potentially disputes between the fire code and the building code. Those all now get resolved in one place. So you don't get whipsawed as a building contractor between these various agencies. And, of course, it is more efficient. The information technology project I really don't want to dwell on because I know Gopal has quite a presentation planned for you around that. But just let me simply again say that we do have our first ever state chief information officer. That position was a cabinet-level position created by that legislation in the 2005 session. Since that time, Gopal's been hard at work. He's instituted a number of projects, and he now has in place his IT governance strategy, which I know he'll tell you about. There are projects that are still going on, and this is a major one. Strategic sourcing is the way in which we buy goods and services, and we're doing it now much more on an enterprise basis. Strategic means simply that you're doing it thoughtfully and consolidating the buys of all agencies. We get the leverage of volume when we all buy the same thing. So if we can agree to standards, for example, on desktops or laptops or office furniture or office supplies, we can then consolidate the volume, and the vendors will offer us significantly improved pricing when we do that. And so thus far, we can declare success with respect to desktops and laptops, where we have achieved what we believe is close to $19 million in savings, mostly enjoyed by K-12 education, because remember that local units of government and K-12 as well as higher ed can buy off of these consolidated contracts. We saved $1.2 million on office supplies. We've just recently announced savings on storage and servers, where the savings are incredibly up to 59% off of what we were previously paying for those devices. In addition to that, I don't want to say that we never paid a lot of attention to negotiations, but with the Drive to Excellence, we have put a renewed focus on negotiating contracts. Now, one would think that it's kind of a common practice, but most agencies believe that if you received a competitive bid, you were required to accept the lowest competitive bid. And that really should only be the starting place for your dialogue with that successful vendor. And what we found is that if we sit down with that vendor and look at the scope of work and look at, in fact, the pricing and so forth, simply by negotiating and oftentimes simply by asking for a lower price, you will receive it. And we've had some remarkable success in negotiating. We can record well over $2 million in negotiated savings through just simply focusing on negotiations. We are continuing to analyze our spend, and one thing we had to do, you will hear in just a minute about our accounting and procurement system, which is 12 years old. It did not enable us to know really what agencies were spending. So we acquired a piece of software that is a spend analysis system that enables us to go into our existing accounting system and determine what agencies are spending for what. And now we know, for example, much better what agencies are spending on a given commodity. That enables us to go to the vendor community, and say, we now know that we are spending, for example, $10 million on office supplies. Bring us your best pricing. But before, we only had it in fragmented or siloed categories. There is more to come. We have a number of other commodities that we are examining. So over the course of the coming months and certainly year, we'll be announcing more savings through our strategic sourcing project. Licensing. This is refers to business and professional licenses. There are over 600 business and professional licenses in the state of Minnesota, administered in most cases separately and with separate systems. Some of them are paper and pencil processes. Some of them are relatively sophisticated online systems where you can actually take the test and receive your license online. So they run the gamut of all different methods. What we would like to provide is a one-stop shop for all business and professional licenses. That's a long-term project and requires a significant investment in systems. But in the meantime, what we have put in place is a single website called License Minnesota. So you don't have to know, for example, which agency has your particular license. You simply know what it is you're seeking to license. You go to License Minnesota, you type in a keyword, and it will take you directly to the agency website that will then provide you the information on that specific license. We receive 168,000 hits on that website just this last year, so we know it has been tremendously successful. It's a start, and it is only a front page, and ultimately we'd like to populate the back end of that system with the full array of technology. The grant management project you may have read about a little bit in the paper here in the last week or two, because the Office of Legislative Auditors just issued a report on the state's grant-making process. Well, over 2 years ago, we recognized the need for better rationalization of how we do grants in the state of Minnesota. Over $1.1 billion in outgoing grants are administered by every single agency in literally a different way. There's a tremendous inconsistency and a wide variety of discipline or lack of discipline in the award of those grants. So a grant management team was formed and came up with a number of detailed recommendations for how we could better make the process consistent across all agencies. And one of its strong recommendations was that we needed a centralized Office of Grants Governance, someplace where who could actually take all of these processes, put them together in a single and common process that everyone could agree on, and then impose single standards for how grants are administered. The grant community is highly in favor of this because, obviously, they have to now suffer through a whole wide variety of grant processes as they go to the various agencies. So, interestingly, the Legislative Auditor's report completely confirms the findings and recommendations of this project, and we will be introducing legislative initiative in this session to implement this recommendation. The Real Property Project. We have over 5,000 buildings owned by the state of Minnesota and over 800 major active leases. Again, these are managed not in a single unified way, but by 22 custodial agencies. Once again, some with fairly sophisticated systems for knowing what they own and its condition, and others with Excel spreadsheets. So what this project would do would take a unified look at what we own so that we could know for the very first time everything we own, its condition, and put in place a system that can track that property. Well, why would we track it? We track it, first of all, to make sure that we have optimum occupancy. We know that we have space under utilization in our state buildings. This will enable us to better utilize that space. We can identify surplus properties for disposition. We can, most importantly, better manage our preventive maintenance so that issues can be prevented rather than mature into full-blown capital projects after the fact. There is so much that we can achieve. Many, many other states and local jurisdictions have implemented real property systems, and the savings are really dramatic from having this system simply in knowing what you own. And at the same time, obviously, with all of these projects, it's one thing to put a system in place, but you also have to put in place a governance structure. How are we going to manage the property of these 22 agencies? And the team, in each of these cases, it isn't someone dictating, thou shalt manage it in a centralized way. The agencies involved are at the table defining their own collaborative governance structure. So we will have in place a governance structure that will, by agreement, as to how this property will be managed. Let me put a footnote here for those of you with DNR interests. The DNR lands, and in fact lands in general, are not covered by this project. They're separate issues associated with those specialized lands. What we are really dealing with here are buildings, properties occupied by state employees in pursuit of state business. MAPS. MAPS is the Minnesota Accounting and Procurement System. As I indicated, it's 12 years old, implemented in 1994. It is not state-of-the-art. This is the system that runs the wheels of state government. Over $30 billion in payments are made from this system every single year to 168,000 vendors. So it's what actually makes the payments. It provides the payroll. It is the central system by which we make all of our procurements. The technology is old, and in one case in the procurement system, no longer supported by the vendor. We worry every time we upgrade our mainframe that it will no longer be compatible with our accounting and procurement system. So it is time for us to come back and say we need to look at the replacement of this accounting and procurement system. The good news in all of this is that our human resources system is relatively new and working well. So we don't have to replace what would be our entire enterprise resource system, but certainly two-thirds of it and a major portion of it needs to be replaced. So we have a plan in place. A team has been working on this. We want to put in place state-of-the-art software. We don't want to be the first state to implement this. We want to put in place software that has been tried by other states and is proven. And we also want to put in place a standard system. Rather than try to take a standard system and tinker with it and make it accommodate our practices, we would rather revise our practices so they are simplified and common and standard. We are at the point now of drafting a request for proposal for that system. Obviously, it will be a major financial investment. Fleet. We own 8,000 passenger vehicles in the state of Minnesota. Primarily five agencies have responsibility for those vehicles. There is the fleet, the cars that you see driving down the road with the state of Minnesota on the side. Those vehicles are managed by the Department of Administration, but also Department of Transportation, DNR, Public Safety, the patrol. Others have vehicles that are managed in separate silos. This project actually brings together each of those agencies, and the first thing they've done is agreed on a system by which we can track each of those vehicles so that we can monitor and manage our costs associated with operating those vehicles. And
Mr. Chair, could I ask a question? Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I guess I'm not quite clear. Were you saying that administration does track the vehicles in those other agencies, or do they not? You know, I guess, do they track them themselves? I guess that's what I'm wondering.
Commissioner Badger.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, at the moment, they're being tracked agency by agency. But under this project, with the implementation of a system for which we do not need additional money, by the way, we have this system already. We're in the process of implementing it. With this system, we will have a central tracking of all vehicles in the same system. We can look and see whose costs are higher or lower. We can benchmark. We can see which cars are being better utilized or underutilized. I think it will result in tremendous efficiency in our fleet. We can better track the use of E85, for example, in our vehicles. It will provide us an enormous information tool by which we can manage the fleet. But more importantly, the agencies who have these fleets have agreed to come to the table and do this in a consolidated way. And that project is being led by the Department of Transportation.
Thank you.
Commissioner, go ahead.
Okay, so what's next? Those are our eight projects, the six plus the two that we kicked off last summer. Well, there are more, and there are many more than I actually have on this page, but these are the ones that are near term on our agenda. The very first one is a project involving enterprise training and development. Today, as I mentioned earlier, every agency really manages its own employee training. And I can tell you from experience, with budget cuts, employee training is actually one of the first things, regrettably, you cut. With the workforce changes that we are going to be experiencing, and with the criticality of retaining and attracting a workforce, we have to pay more attention to training. So if we do it in an enterprise way, we could do it much more efficiently, and we can ensure that there won't be haves and have-nots. Agencies who can't afford to do training, agencies who don't have the resources to put a training program in place, because we will do it at the enterprise level. Now, here's the vision with this project. The vision would be that every single state employee would have an icon on their desktop, which is their training icon. By the way, I should mention we're partnered with Minsky on this, and Minsky already has this software in place and will share it with us. But every employee can go to that icon and scroll and find all available online training programs, as well as all available stand-up or in-seat training programs available throughout the state. They can register online, they can get approval from their supervision online, and they can manage the payment for the training online. That's part of it. Secondly, then we can track the training that each employee has, which we really don't have a good system to do today. So as we try to develop our workforce, as we need to do to replace these vast retirements, we can put training plans in place. So in order to become the next manager of procurement, if an employee needs to take 3 or 4 courses, we can put that into that individual's training plan, and systematically and with an online tool assisting that employee, that training can be obtained more methodically. So that's a very exciting program. I think we will be implementing that relatively soon. We're looking for a pilot to be implemented just within the next few months. Very closely related to that is workforce succession planning. Some agencies are doing this very well, but they're doing it, again, on an agency-specific basis. And all this really is planning for the attrition that we know we're going to have. It's identifying, first of all, the jobs that are critical, figuring out how to replace those skills and knowledge by developing a succession plan. It's also looking at how we're doing the work today versus how we're going to do the work 3 and 5 years from now, whether it will continue to be manual or electronic. It's identifying the skills that we will need 3 and 5 years from now, and it's putting in place the training plans to make sure employees get that. So it's a great effort. I think it is the only way in which we will responsibly address this massive exodus of state employees that we know we will have. The next one is called SMART, or Small Agency Resource Team. I actually, to be honest with you, I forgot I had individual slides on these. Let me move to right to that one. Small Agency Resource Team is an idea, quite frankly, I stole from Connecticut. It is a way in which very, very small agencies whose budgets have really been cut to the bone and are really sub-optimized in some of these support areas, financial services and HR services, they're down to a half of a person or a third of a person doing all of their HR transactions, where they can get full and complete service through a centralized resource team housed in the Department of Administration. So we will be coming forward with an initiative, a very small initiative, seed money, to create this small agency resource team to relieve these very small agencies and to actually improve the service that they're receiving and to ensure that they get consistent and good service for less money. And then what's coming next is this whole notion of shared services. If you go back to the enterprise model, we had the utility services and the shared services. What is shared service? We will be implementing shared services in a methodical way over the next 4 years, kind of service by service. But it's taking a lot of these functions that are transactional in nature, things like expense account processing, accounts payable and receivable, employee orientation, benefits enrollment, and removing those responsibilities from the individual agencies, freeing them up to do what they do best, and putting them in a central shared services organization. I think it's really important, and we all have to remind ourselves of the fact that it is not centralized service. The states and countries that have implemented shared services have found that it works best when the customer agencies actually own the service. And so what will happen here is that we will consolidate these common business functions. We will get the economies of skill and scale. But an important component of that is that the agencies who are receiving the service will, through a governing board, set the service standards and will control the costs of those services. So we are just at the very front end of understanding what shared services are all about, educating ourselves about it, and then beginning to go through and educate customer agencies as to how this will benefit them. The SMART initiative, starting with the small boards and commissions, is a first step. It's getting our toe in the water with shared services. That is a Reader's Digest version of the Drive to Excellence. There is so, so much more. If you have a curiosity about any of these projects or about any of our progress, we have a monthly report online at the Excellence website, which is shown here. We just encourage questions. We have an email where we encourage ideas and suggestions as well as questions. So there's no lack of information about this topic if you'd like to know more. I would stand for questions.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. I've got a I've got a few questions, and by the way, members, the next speaker is going to be talking about computers, technology, software. So if you have questions along that line, the next speaker, I think, would be the better one to ask those questions. But some few questions I've got, Commissioner. This program has been going on for about 2 years. Have we realized any savings so far or elimination of full-time employees or anything? And where are we on as far as what it's costing us to do it and being more efficient so we need less people? What direction are we going in?
I mean, that's clearly an outstanding question, and I will say that we have not tracked employee reductions. I don't believe that any of these projects had as their goal reductions of employees. What we really hoped to do was keep ahead of what we understand will be a shrinking workforce. That will come more with shared services. Now, with respect to costs, we have, on a commodity-by-commodity basis, been able to calculate roughly the amount of savings that we have achieved because we knew the dollar amount of spend. We knew that we were spending $10 million, for example, on office supplies, and we know that when we negotiated our contract with the vendor, we received a 12% reduction over prior prices. Well, then one can equate that to $1.2 million of savings. But it's very, very hard to track the savings on a package of Post-it notes. So, I mean, those savings are spread across all purchasers from our office supply connection, which includes, of course, not just state agencies, local units of government, and higher education. I did mention earlier the $19 million that we've saved in desktops and laptops. The vast majority of that has gone to K-12. We do know we have anecdotal evidence of a school district, for example, in southern Minnesota, who was actually able to save a single teacher's job because of the savings that they were able to achieve under that desktop contract. We have not, and I am not today prepared to give you an aggregate savings number. Some of these are forward-looking projections, obviously. The storage and server contract only went into effect in December, so we have not yet really begun realizing those savings. I guess I would just simply have to say that where we are realizing savings, we are not capturing them for any other purpose at this time.
Mr. McElroy, I believe, had been in charge of this in the governor's office, and he's going to be leaving if he hasn't already left. What is there going to be a new point person in charge of this overall program?
Mr. Chair, I guess I would have to say that Mr. McElroy's role with respect to this program has been a part of his portfolio. He's been the governor's special advisor on innovation. He was tasked by the governor to track innovation throughout all state government of whatever kind. And so things like agency realignments, other kinds of efficiencies and savings that are not within the Drive to Excellence were also being tracked by Mr. McElroy. He did publish his innovations inventory, which is on the web as well, and it contains many, many more things that are here in the Drive to Excellence. So Mr. McElroy's role with the Drive to Excellence in particular was as our external marketeer. He gave over 175 presentations throughout Minnesota talking about the Drive to Excellence and its results. I, however, have been the chair of the Drive to Excellence sub-cabinet from the inception.
Okay, so his departure would not affect the overall program, is that what you're...
Mr. Chair, I really regret that we lose him because he's a great marketeer. But other than that, the internal workings of the program will be unaffected.
You talked about the grants to the nonprofits and made reference to the legislative auditor's report. Have all of the issues raised by the legislative auditors been addressed with the grants? You've talked about centralized governance, the single standards, and so forth. Are they taken care of now?
Mr. Chair, we will be introducing, as I mentioned, a legislative package that we believe addresses all of the issues raised by the legislative auditor. We would hope to bring the legislative auditor with us as we testify in support of that package and get their endorsement of it, but we understand that they are fully supportive of the DRIVE recommendations.
As to cell phones, it seems to me that with all of the vendors out there, all the technologies, whether it's Singular, Verizon, BlackBerry, whatever, are we going to be able to, you know, rope this in and keep some standards in there because everybody's going to want to go their different direction, every agency? How are we going to manage that?
Mr. Chair, I really meant to mention that In addition to negotiating significant good pricing and improved pricing on cell phones, we also issued a cell phone policy at the same time. I'll just digress for a minute and say that when I joined state government a little over 2 years ago, I asked for a cell phone and was given a list of 48 different instruments being provided by several different carriers, and I was just mystified. I had come from a corporate setting where you got the corporate phone. So we're really pleased that with and this, again, was a multi-agency team that came to agreement with respect to the standards. We now have three cell phone vendors, one for the metro area, one for southern Minnesota, and one for northern Minnesota, each of whom have a standard cell phone, an all-purpose cell phone. We have one or two alternatives for public safety, for example. Law enforcement needs a little different standard. And we also have a standard PDA device. And that's all you can get under the state contract today.
I've only got one other point, and then I'll certainly open up to comments or questions from the members. You know, when I was on this budget division in the late 90s, I had an idea. I said, you know, and I'm surprised that this hasn't been brought up, but I proposed a state travel office. I said, you know, we have all this money that we're spending, but everybody just books, you know, all through the state agencies. When they got to go somewhere, they all make their own arrangements. They just do what they want, turn in the vouchers, and they get paid. And it just seems to me, with the cost of travel being what they are, maybe we ought to just have a small group of people that oversee it, do all the booking. If you want to go somewhere, they will do it for you, and maybe we can get some savings by working with, you know, getting the best rates from the airlines or rental car companies or whatever. And I just have a hunch that this has got not a lot of attention, but it's something where we're spending a lot of money that probably we could show some efficiencies in. Has any thought been given to doing something along those lines?
Mr. Chair, I mentioned the 400 ideas that we originally started with, and clearly that was mentioned several times amongst those ideas. So it still is on our roadmap. Actually, Mr. McElroy, if he were here, could probably address this one fairly competently because he's a former travel agent. And I'm not really competent to give you the definitive answer on the subject, but my understanding is that with today's internet booking devices, where one can get the cheapest fare at any given time, we are probably well served by that mechanism. Now, if you want to control travel from a policy standpoint, and the amount of travel that's occurring and put additional approval on travel. But the belief is, and I would be happy to provide this validation for you later because I'm operating off of top of mind, that there are not significant savings involved in using a centralized travel source. That is counterintuitive for me as well because in my corporate life we did have a central travel office that negotiated some fairly good deals. So let me get back to you on that, if I may. I
appreciate you. Other questions of the members? Sir Olsen, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, in regards to the strategic sourcing project, you had talked about when bids were let or RFPs and you examined the bids, then you would go back and negotiate possibly even a better price. I was curious if then do you open that up to the other vendors that were in the process also?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, there are, as you may know, two different kinds of procurement in state government. If it's a request for proposal, it anticipates the possibility of a negotiation or even a reverse auction following the award to the successful bidder. If it is an invitation for bids, as we have oftentimes in construction, you do take the lowest responsible bidder without further dialogue. So In our procurement statutes where we are awarding a request for proposal, we are to award on the basis of best value, price, and other factors considered. And that price and other factors considered allows us to go back then and look at the total array of the contract. We can't change the basic terms and conditions. We cannot change the scope of work. If we were to do either of those things, we would have to go back and reopen the competition.
Thank you.
Other questions? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if there are any other issues that you want to deal with that are going to require legislative approval or if you can do a lot of this in-house.
For
sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, let me just kind of highlight for what the items that I believe we will be coming back. I know we will be coming back to the legislature on. Last session, we had proposed some relatively minor changes in our sourcing statutes. They passed both houses. through all the committees, but they didn't quite make it, and they were one of those bills that at about 4 a.m. on the last night of session just didn't quite make it. And so that, as well as the grant management language, suffered the same fate. We will be back with those same packages, and in the grants case, we will be beefing that up with the Grants Governance Office, which was not in last year's bill. So those are two pieces of legislation. There will be some budget initiatives, as I mentioned earlier. I believe there will be some significant budget initiatives around some IT investments. We will be seeking a small amount of support for our small agency resource team. But by and large, we've been able to do most of this under existing authority, and we will continue to do most of it under existing authority. Enterprise training and development requires no legislative support. Succession planning, no legislative. These are things that are just good business, and we can go ahead and do.
Sarah Roebling.
Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure if this is under our committee's purview or not, but I think what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And as she was talking about this, I was thinking about the House and the Senate and our two very separate systems for purchasing computers, for training. Mm-hmm. And I think, couldn't we recognize some savings by having a shared system? And I don't know if it ever was shared and then went its own way, or if it's never been shared, but if anyone's ever considered putting those together and sharing them as legislative as a legislative pool instead of a Senate or a House service.
Well, we do have oversight over the legislative budget, so at the appropriate time when we review that part, we can take a look at that.
Mr. Chairman,
Sir Pappas.
On the same vein, I was wondering if we couldn't also benefit from some of the initiatives that Commissioner Badgerow and her team have done, like this whole discussion of cell phones has me very frustrated because I don't feel that we get a lot of guidance from our IT people, and at least not in the Senate.
Anything else? Sir Olson.
Mr. Chair, in regards to when you talked about the enterprise workforce planning and then the shared services, and you talked about reengineering the workforce, are you talking about like cross-training so people can work in different positions? And
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, it's definitely that for sure. One of my biggest concerns is that we have not done as good a job as we really could in documenting the work that we do. There's a tremendous amount of knowledge walking around in people's heads. And I use this example. I hope he will forgive me, but Bernie Steele is the person, for example, in my department who books events at the Capitol grounds. And he knows all of the ins and outs of what can and can't happen with respect to an event, a rally, a protest on the Capitol grounds. And I have challenged him to please document all of the things that he does, because we need to be able to be prepared upon his retirement to be able to have someone pick those things up. I'm not suggesting Bernie's about to retire, but that's just a simple example of the kinds of things we need to very definitely document, and we need to have people now stepping in and understanding what those tasks are and being able to back the individual up. So, yes, it's cross-training. It's really enriching people's jobs. I'm hoping that this makes the state of Minnesota an even more attractive employer of choice.
Okay. Any further questions? Appears to be done. Well, thank you, Commissioner. I think we'll be in touch, obviously, down the road when the budget issues come forward, and we appreciate the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
The next on our agenda is the overview of the Office of Enterprise Technology, Mr. Gopalkana. And members, you may want to think about some of the many changes we've seen in computers and software in our own lives and here at the legislature the last couple of years, and the challenges that this provides for state government and communicating from agency to agency, and also from the state agencies down to the local level. There's a lot of software, a lot of standards out there, and how do we make them consistent? How do we do the right thing? And think back to the fact that in the 1960s we had punch cards, which nobody could read now, and how do we make sure that we have what's available today readable 10, 20 years from now. So there's a lot of stuff going on that we have to stay on top of. So, Mr. Khanna, welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, sir. Members of the committee, I'm Gopal Khanna, State CIO, and it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for asking me to come and present and give you an overview of OET.
Go ahead.
Let me, as Kathy DeMaul over here sets up the slides, give you an overview of Office of Enterprise Technology. As Commissioner Badger pointed out, it's a new agency established in the summer of 2005. I came on board on August 15th of 2005, joined the governor's cabinet, and I'm really pleased to report that Minnesota has an exciting opportunity to leverage technology to modernize the ways in which we deliver services to our citizens. The demand and supply equation is changing rather rapidly, and we need to position our state to be able to service our citizens, the iPod generation, as the governor calls it. Over the last 12 months, as I've gone out and visited with the legislators on both the sides of the aisle, I've been asked a lot of questions. Why can't we have full assessment of what the IT spend is? How large is it? Where is it? What are the major portfolios, projects? A lot of why questions. Why can't we do this and why can't we do that? The bottom line is that that there are certain internal environmental issues that have been in place for the last 20 plus years that prevent us from doing that, and I would summarize them in those three categories. One is we've been working in a totally decentralized computing environment, and there's nothing wrong with that. The entire corporate America was operating and has been operating in that environment for the last 20, 25 years. When the desktop computing first arrived, it gave the power to the user, to the individual worker, and that set in motion in the early 80s this whole swing of pendulum from a centralized computing environment to a decentralized computing environment, which has been great. It has ushered in an era of great productivity gains for the private sector as well as the public sector. But at the same time, it's been a double-edged sword, because as it gets decentralized, so does the funding model. And with the decentralization of the funding model and a siloed approach to funding, and a combination of that together with lack of enterprise standards, have really ushered in a bunch of barriers that prevent us to give the kind of information that you've been asking for and looking for. However, at the same time, as we look at where we are today, there are some very compelling forces in place that really demand that we visit our view of the world and rethink our strategies going forward. Thanks to your wisdom and the fact that the legislature, in a bipartisan effort, put forth a legislation that calls for looking at an enterprise view by creating Office of Enterprise Technology. There are two pieces that are really happening. One is on the demand side of the equation, citizens are saying, give me 24/7 government access, 24/7. And on the other side, as Commissioner Badger pointed out, with the exodus of people leaving government services, what we'll see is inability of government to maintain 9-to-5 service delivery environment. Forget 24/7. So we do have to make a change, and a rather drastic and a significant change in our approach going forward to support government operations. Does not matter what the mission is, and does not matter what agency it is. We do have to take an enterprise view. So over the last 12 months, what we've done is we've started focusing on developing a master plan. I'm told that this is the first such master plan, and we are due to deliver that to the legislature in the next few weeks, and we'll be doing that. There are 8 components, 8 strategies in this plan that we have talked about. By the way, this is the first level planning process, which involved about 80 plus people across various government entities throughout the enterprise so that we can get a collective view. And the idea over here is for this to be the first plan to serve as the base level program to start with. And as we put in place our programs, we will be revising it and it will become a living document going forward. But those 8 areas are, number one, security. If you'll recall, in December of 2005, the legislative auditor came out with a report and pointed out 8 areas of remediation for Office of Enterprise Technology, focused mostly in the centralized computing environment. It was a wake-up call. The truth of the matter is that we do have very large concerns in the area of security. The more access we provide it's a double-edged sword. It also provides opportunities for people who want to hack our systems, invade our privacy, be able to enter and get the information. We need to take a more comprehensive and larger, stronger view to securing our data going forward as we open and make government available to our citizens 24/7. We've been working furiously this last 6 months more so in remediating some of those inadequacies. Thanks again to the legislature for giving us $1.9 million this past session, and we now have in place an enterprise information security officer who's been focusing in that area. We have also one of the strategies in the area of electronic government, where we are looking at focusing on working on projects like e-licensing, the one that Commissioner Badger talked about. The third area of focus in our strategies, and the work has already commenced in this area as well, is consolidating IT services where it makes sense to do that. And it does make sense to do that across the enterprise. We've had some successes, and I'll talk more about that in a moment. The fourth area of focus as a strategy going forward would be in modernizing our systems and replacing our legacy systems. We've got literally hundreds and thousands of applications that were written in the 60s and the 70s, 70s and the 80s, which would need to be retired over the next 10 years and would need to be modernized to fulfill the computing needs of the agencies in the future. We have also put in place an IT governance structure, an extensive one, and the master plan calls for making it more so robust so that we can bring to the citizens the accountability and transparency they're looking for. The next area is going to be, a focus area is going to be in the area of architecture, standards, and practices. One of the problems we have had in the past is lack of enterprise standards. Our focus going forward would be to remediate that and bring more standards and focus on achieving a coherent enterprise architecture. And the last two, focusing on information management and resource management. Again, as Commissioner Badger pointed out, we have a brain drain problem, and we'll have to manage those resources so that we keep the knowledge capital and continue providing our services to the citizens. To date, we have accomplished quite a bit. We've been at work quite furiously, as Commissioner Badger pointed out, and our focus has been in several areas. Let me quickly point out where we have the work has already commenced. One of the things that was missing was enterprise planning. We have, over the last 12 months, done a lot of work in this area, and we'll continue to do more so going forward. Enterprise architecture program has been started. And by the way, in all of these initiatives, what we have done is taken an enterprise view by engaging people in the design and the rollout of the solutions as well. Commissioner Badger talked about 200-some people being involved in the Drive to Excellence initiatives early on. Since then, 300-plus people have been involved in rollout of some of these solutions and build-out of some of these solutions. We are focused on portfolio management, an area that is desperately needed to get our hands around all the IT investments, projects going on, so we know where they are and make sure the accountability is there. We have, about a year ago, we launched an initiative to narrow down our desktop standards. When I first arrived here, I was horrified to see there were literally hundreds of images of desktop computing that were available. No wonder we were spending so much money, as well as having the architecture totally out of control. So one of the things that we did was we set up a team and got literally 120 people involved across agencies, including K-12 and cities and counties, and said, narrow down the desktop standards. The outcome has been for the enterprise is that we now have culled down those standards. The vendor community came back and they sharpened the pencils and reduced the prices of the desktop by almost 44%, which is the $19 million estimated number that Commissioner Badger was talking about. We have done the same thing about 4 months ago in the area of desktop, in the area of storage and servers. That kind of effort will continue over the next few years to bring to rationalize our architecture as well as our acquisition. We are working with Commissioner Badger and other agencies, Department of Labor and Industry, specifically in the area of e-licensing. And that's one of the major applications and systems that will usher in electronic government. We have done a lot of work in the area of providing and building a security framework. We have established a security council across the enterprise, which is working together to bring about one approach to managing security. The fact that we have so much computing available is also the very reason why there's a risk and exposure to our data and information, and having a security officer in place now and having a security council in place has set in motion a more broad enterprise view to taking security seriously. Otherwise, we will, again, have lapses where we will lose data, which is not acceptable. And finally, infrastructure consolidation. We've done already significant work. We went to Department of Transportation about a year ago and have been working with them in identifying areas where we could combine and consolidate the infrastructure. Through consolidation, we'll rationalize. Through rationalization, we'll have better accountability, reduce the cost structure of operations going downstream. We worked with Department of Revenue, and a couple of days ago, we announced an agreement with Doer as well. The work continues in these areas. A lot has been accomplished, but a lot more needs to be done. Our mission is to really support the transformation of public services, to move away from 9-to-5 operating environment to 24-by-7 environment. Our vision is to basically provide an efficient and effective management of information resources across the enterprise. This is, again, a multi-year undertaking because what we have before us is years of legacy systems and legacy architecture that is in place, and migration will take multi-year implementation strategies. Our formula is quite simple. I think there are really three things that need to be done, and the fourth one is an imperative. The three things that need to be done is we need to modernize our systems because these are legacy systems. They will not be able to support the online computing environment that is needed by our citizens. Second thing that must happen is we need to consolidate as much of IT infrastructure as we can and as quickly as possible. And number three is we need to re-engineer our business processes. We need to collapse our business processes to be able to manage and work with a reduced workforce downstream. And the imperative, of course, is cultural change over here. It is indeed a huge cultural change because we have been operating in a siloed computing environment, which I say has not been bad either for the private sector or the public sector in the past. However, going forward, it is something that will not deliver the goods, will not deliver the services, will not respond to the computing needs and the service needs going forward in the future. A combination of that will indeed achieve the transformation we are looking for. Our focus in seven areas right now as we speak, and again, some of it has been addressed, enterprise architecture must be addressed and built over a period of next few years. Our information security work has started. A lot needs to be done in this area, and we will continue focusing in this area as a number one priority for ourselves. We have focused on our rationalizing our resources, IT resources, whether it be hardware, software, licenses, contracts, and we're working very closely with Commissioner Badger and her team to make sure that best acquisition practices can be put in place. So the savings that she was alluding to earlier was a joint effort that we achieved as an enterprise. As she said, it was a team effort. We're focusing on enhancing intergovernmental coordination, and our key driver over there is the whole strategic planning process. We are working on improving our service level. Our approach and strategy is to improve the services and continuously look for ways whereby we can aggregate and through aggregation find ways to optimize our resources as well. Our focus will continue to be in the area of electronic delivery of services, looking for electronic applications where they are citizen-facing applications and we can deliver them through web services that can be deployed. And finally, planning and program management will be a huge focus because that gives us the accountability, that gives you the tools to manage the IT resources and IT investments over a period of time. I will take your questions now.
Thank you, Mr. Khanna. I do have a couple of questions and certainly invite those from the committee members.
You did make a reference to the legislative auditor's report from 2005, and they were quite critical about some of the state systems, hackers being able to get access to things, some of the breaches. Have we adequately addressed the issues that the auditor raised?
Mr. Chairman, my focus has been in the area of security, literally as a number one priority for the agency, and we have been working on remediating all the areas that were identified as inadequacies in the systems and our processes and procedures. We have acquired some tools. We have staffed up, and we now have in place our Chief Information Security Officer, a small team, and we hope to have that team completely in place in the next 3 months, as well as have made significant progress in all those areas. There are a couple of recommendations that are long-term recommendations, like recommendation number one was alluding to enterprise planning. That's an ongoing journey. It's something that cannot be completed in a finite time in the short haul. However, significant effort has been undertaken in that area, and we have a report coming out for the OLA giving them the status of where we are.
We just heard the presentation from Commissioner Badgerill on the other portions of the governor's program, Drive for Excellence. Are the things that you're doing within the computer areas able to accomplish those goals, and particularly in such a way that we can realize some savings in doing that? How do these two mesh?
Mr. Chairman, all the ideas that were presented by Commissioner Badgerill are business-focused ideas, and technology has a role, a relevant role, in some cases very high and in some cases low. And wherever it's applicable, Office of Enterprise Technology and Technology will provide the support to realize the end objectives. So there is enormous amount of synergy. It's not one or the other. There's tremendous amount of partnership and synergy in making some of those initiatives happen. And for example, she alluded to the e-licensing, the licensing system. It is a very technology-enabled solution, but has a business process element to it as well. So you are right, sir. There are opportunities for technology to play a role, and it is already doing so.
You know, then the huge question, of course, is that we've got so many changes coming on, new computers, new software, new everything, and it changes every year. You buy stuff and it's already obsolete. And even a few years ago, it was one agency wasn't able to talk to a different agency computer-wise simply because they had different programs, different levels of government to have it. And as we get more and more tools, you know, to do our work, and they're all expensive, I have this fear that everybody's going in different directions, and are we ever going to be able to pull it all together? You hate to set one standard and says everybody has to use Microsoft Word as opposed to WordPerfect, but at some point, if everybody's making their own decisions, how are we ever going to rein in all this technology that's going on? I just heard some number the other day that the state of California has like 300 different email systems, you know, or something like that. What are we going to do as this thing is spreading out on us?
Senator, you're absolutely right. Over the last 5 years, the computing environment has become more complex, and going forward over the next 5 years, if I look out going forward, it will get more complex. There's no question about that. However, there's an 80-20 rule as well. I think a lot of it can be standardized, and that's where our first focus has to be. Yes, agencies will have unique computing needs, and there'll be unique needs for standards or unique technologies, and they have to be dealt with in a unique manner. And, for example, in establishing our desktop standards, we realized that we have to allow for unique orders to take place, and that will happen. So if we take an enterprise view, the opportunity exists to rationalize our investments, to move towards more standardization. Will it be 100% standardized ever? I do not know what the technology trends will be 5 or 10 years from now, but certainly right now, the entire corporate America as well as the public sector is moving towards leveraging standardization as much as they can, and that has to be our first approach. We must standardize as much as we can.
Questions? Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, this is more of a, I was very impressed with what you had set up yesterday at the Humphrey Institute, the technology and the access that people have. My concern does go back to the security. You know, I can reserve a park, state park, up to midnight the day before, but are we going to, personally, I'm not comfortable using my credit card over the internet. I guess that kind of outdates me, but that's one of my big concerns is the security.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, you're absolutely right. It keeps me up all night. I've lost a lot of my hair. When I came here, I was 6 feet, 3 inches tall. I had a head full of hair. I've certainly lost many nights wondering as to what the risk and exposure is. But we're working furiously in that area, and that's an area that's number one priority for us. And we are building that as part of our culture. We are making it part of our practice. It is partly having tools, technologies to secure the environment, but it's also cultural and practices, best practices driven. So there's a lot of training that is required. We cannot be lax about it going forward in the future, but there's no reason why we cannot overcome that and give that secure environment so that citizens feel comfortable in dealing with the state of Minnesota and saying, yes, it's a secure computing environment. It is very achievable. Yes, indeed, a lot of work has to be done going forward.
Other questions? Senator Orson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Khanna, can you give us some expectation for timing in terms of how long we can expect generally government to be able to provide that kind of security for online commerce for state services?
Mr. Khanna.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Larson, right now we are in the midst of putting together an enterprise plan, which my horizon for this whole transformation is literally 10 years. It is something that require multi-year effort and rather large effort across the whole enterprise. The work has already commenced, and what we will be putting forth, hopefully in the very short near future, is a more detailed plan where we will show activities as to how we are escalating and improving our security discipline across the enterprise. There are 2, 3, 4 strategies. Number one, as I said, was training. Number two, setting up security council and issuing policies and procedures. Number three, ensuring compliance. Number four, bringing tools so that we can safeguard and prevent the previous occurrences in the past. And that, by the way, is an ongoing journey because what we secure today becomes hackers' dream tomorrow because they want to break that and invade that. So it's an ongoing journey, and we'll continue working on that. So you will be hearing more from us in terms of detailed plan. I don't have that specifically with me right now, but we'll be delighted to give you a separate report on that as well.
Further questions? This is a huge area, and we'll be visiting again. But, thank you, Mr. Khanna, for your presentation, and we'll be in touch as we get into the budget details here. But thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee. Appreciate your support. Thank you.
And then, members, I'd ask Mr. Lundeen to give us kind of an overview of the budget areas that we have. And, by the way, I failed to introduce our committee page, Allison Pembroke, who's handing the handouts to you. She's also available to the budget division during the session. So, Mr. Lundeen, the floor is yours.
Thank you. What's being handed out to you is some slides for a presentation. It's actually part of a presentation that the fiscal analysts are all doing. We did it this morning, and we'll be doing it tomorrow for members and then for staff on Friday afternoon. And I thought it would be good to use here because it kind of gives a big picture look at the jurisdiction. In addition to those slides that are handed out, I've handed out 2 spreadsheets to you. The first of which is the 8.5 by 11, which is just kind of detailing the general fund appropriations that we're tracking. I think a lot of times we tend to focus on the general fund and the general fund forecast, so that will be a lot of our focus in this committee. And then the other spreadsheet is the more detailed spreadsheet, which has all of the direct appropriations on there and the open appropriations that we're tracking. And this provides a little bit more of detail within the various agencies and the programs. And what I put together there is the fiscal year 6 and 7. Fiscal year 6 is the actual spending that took place. This is all based on the November forecast. And then fiscal year 7, what you're looking at there is the projected or estimated spending that agencies anticipate making within the biennium. And then the next columns is fiscal years 8 and 9, and those are the base numbers, kind of the starting point where we'll be coming from with the budget. And I think I'll just start with the slides. So turning to the second page with the pie chart, this just kind of gives a big picture view of the sources of funding within this area. I think one of the things when you look at this, you see that, you know, about 25% of it is directly appropriated, and then there's about 75%, which is various statutory funds, which there's authority within statutes, and this spending will just continue without, you know, the legislature taking any action. And I'll just kind of point out some of the things that fall in that other funds area. That would be things such as federal funds that various agencies receive. It would be some of the, like in some of the offices, like the state auditor, there's some TIF auditing money, a little bit of the TIF money that goes to fund that audit function. The Secretary of State, especially in the 6 and 7 biennium, received a lot of the Help America Vote one-time federal dollars. There's the Department of Finance, which does some billing to state agencies for the accounting system. The Attorney General, they have a number of partner agreements. We do a direct appropriation to them, but with some of the larger agencies, they have agreements, and there's billing rates and stuff set forth. A big portion of this is in the Department of Employee Relations with the State Employee Group Insurance Program, and there's about $1.3 billion in premiums and the reserve kind of flowing through there, so that's a big portion of it. And there's some smaller portions within DOER too, such as the workers' comp, admin costs, and stuff like that. The Office of Administrative Hearings has a revolving fund where they charge the state agencies and local governments fees, and that would be going through here. The Department of Administration has a number of internal service funds. That would be things like plant management, that's paying the janitors' salaries and stuff like that. And the money flows through there, kind of through the leases and the rents that are paid by state agencies in buildings that are under the control of the Department of Administration. Another big thing in the Department of Administration, another internal service fund, would be the motor pool. And there's a number of internal service funds in there, and when we get to their budget, we will get into talking about those in greater detail. And then with the Office of Technology or Enterprise Technology, there's the Enterprise Technology Fund, which is dealing with the telecommunications and computing for state agencies, and there's fees and stuff that are charged there and come back to the agency. And then there's also some other assorted funds. There may be some gift funds, special revenue, and what, kind of making up the remainder of that. And then just taking a look at the next slide, this is just kind of focusing in on the general fund money and just kind of giving you a view of, you know, where it's going. You can see that half of the general fund money that we'll be dealing with here will be going to the executive branch agencies. The legislature makes up a big portion of that at 21%. The constitutional officers are another 15%. There's a number of small boards and commissions that we'll be dealing with. And then we do the tracking for the retirement funds. This would be general fund appropriations only. And we do directly appropriate some of these in the bill, but they do have open appropriation authority, and the amounts are forecasted. And essentially, we're doing the tracking of it here. We're not going to get into a lot of the pension policy and that sort of stuff. And then the next sheet just kind of breaks out the pie chart. And if you look at that spreadsheet on the 8.5 by 11, it just kind of further breaks out a little more of the detail looking at some of the budgets. And then turning to the next page, this kind of gets into a little bit about what I was talking about with all those kind of statutory funds. I think in this area, because there's a lot of services being provided by agencies to other agencies, there's a lot of billings and a lot of fees and stuff going on. For example, if you look at the Attorney General's budget for the legal services, 65% of their budget is general fund, but about 25% of their budget is coming through these partner agency agreements with the various agencies, and that amounts to about $21 million in a biennium. Moving on to administration, this was some of the internal service funds that I was talking about. The Department of Administration's budget, about 6% of it is coming from the general fund, and 94% of it is coming from the internal service funds, federal dollars, or special revenue. Administrative hearings, we appropriate some money there. There's some workers' comp money that's directly appropriated and a small amount of general fund for the municipal boundaries. And then to pay for the administrative law judges and the staff attorneys, they have a billing rate out, and that's about $3.2 million that comes into the agency for the biennium. Department of Employee Relations, I did mention CGIP, but it's interesting to note that of their total budget, about 1% of it is coming from the general fund. Taking a look at the Office of Enterprise Technology, about 5.5% of their budget is coming from the general fund, with the remainder of it coming through that Enterprise Technology Fund. And looking at the Department of Finance, 69% of their budget is coming from the general fund. 31% of it is coming through the billing for the statewide systems. This is the billing on the volume of transactions generated in the accounting and payroll systems. And the Investment Board, 3% of their operating budget is coming from the general fund. And this is basically those costs to the board that are associated with the investment of the general fund portion of the treasurer's cash. We made a change to their budget last year. We used to appropriate more, and then the various retirement funds and the funds that the State Board of Investment is investing, there would come back non-dedicated fees to the general fund, but they had a proposal where they wanted to receive those dollars directly, and so we would just appropriate the general fund that was associated with their general fund work. Turning to the next page, this is just, I think, to kind of point out, I think a lot of times people, when they hear state government, they think, you know, we're responsible for all of the state employees, all of the bureaucracy. So I think what this shows is of the 34,000 employees, about 11% of them are showing up in this budget division. The other 89% are within all the other budget divisions. And so this is looking at the executive branch and the legislature. The university and MNSCU are not included within these numbers. And then I thought I would just kind of list a couple of the issues that, you know, we've spent some time on in the last year. Couple years dealing with. I think we had a good overview of technology from the Office of Enterprise Technology. Another issue that we deal with here a lot is with state and non-state-owned buildings. This is something that the Department of Administration is responsible for, leases and maintenance of buildings. And so, you know, we've been looking at how to best fund asset preservation, and some of this stuff is done in the capital investment bill, and some of it we make some direct appropriations. We've set up some funds over the years, taking portions of the rent that agencies pay and putting it into a repair and renovation account. And sometimes when the budget's been short, we've had to raid some of these accounts, which puts further stresses on the buildings and how to best deal with them. Another thing that we've dealt with is the rising employer costs, and let me just turn here a minute to just kind of talk about that a little bit. It was in 2001 that our insurance plan became fully insured by the state, and in 2002 the current Advantage plan that we use, which is the tiered cost structure, was implemented. And I think that's something that we've seen some savings in the healthcare area. I think over the last 10 years or so, the average healthcare costs have risen about 8.5%. And this is in comparison to kind of a national average of 10.3%. And I think that the agency DOER is continuing to see some savings there, some of the benefits that are coming from this Advantage program and how people have been responding to it. CGIP covers about 52,000 employees, and this is including a small number of retirees and staff. Just to kind of point out, the annual premium that the state paid in calendar year 2006 was about $413 million, and employees paid about $39 million, so there was a combined premium cost of $452 million for the year. And I think when we looked at 2006, there was a 0% increase in the premium costs. And going forward into 2007, DOER is estimating that there will be almost a 10% increase in the insurance premium costs. And I think turning back, the other thing we've spent some time with was the drive to excellence. And I think the Commissioner of Administration gave a very thorough look at that program. And so that's kind of in a nutshell, you know, what we'll be dealing with here and some of the issues.
Just one question, Mr. Lindeen. During the budget deficits of recent years, were a lot of these agencies and the accounts we've got jurisdiction over, were they kind of scaled back? I don't recall what happened there.
Yeah, there were a number of cuts to these agencies, and I think a lot of times people kind of fear the state government bill because we do a lot of across-the-board cuts that are not just going to affect these agencies we've talked about, but that will affect the other budget divisions and so forth. So there have been significant cuts to a number of agencies.
Let me point out, Senator Olstein was not here, but the rest of us were here during that really fun special session in 2005 with the partial government shutdown. And people forget and don't understand that that was all done to fund education. You know, we funded K-12 education. I think we put about, $800 million in the formula for that, something like that. And that's what ultimately happened. Well, when you look at the total budget that we have for all of our agencies, that's less than what we went through that special session for. And in fact, so I try to tell people sometimes, they say, well, there may be fraud, waste, and abuse, and so forth. There may be some savings. But if you bulldoze the whole state capital complex, if you fired all the state employees that we have jurisdiction over, you're not going to have any real money for anything. You know, we'll put a dent in the state budget, but, you know, I think people kind of overestimate, you know, what, you know, the effect of. There's a lot of things that we can do and we can look at. But the real money is spent elsewhere. You know, we have a lot of the detail stuff here. So any questions? Senator Pappas.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, since the legislature, specifically the Senate, is under our jurisdiction, will we be hearing anything about any internal drive to excellence or IT innovations or anything that's going on? Based on your comments, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
We will be reviewing the Senate budget. Now, I don't know, how does the House come over and make their presentation here, too? Okay. And
No, they don't.
They'll do their budget in the House. Mm-hmm. We will look at the Senate budget.
Specifically, though, I'm interested in the IT because I don't really feel, as I mentioned earlier, that I think we could be doing better as a group if we got some more expertise involved. And obviously, we have our internal, our laptops. But in terms of other kinds of technological devices like BlackBerries, or like, for example, I bought a Palm Pilot last year, and that was perfectly fine with IT. They recommended even the kind of Palm Pilot I bought, and then I found out that I have to actually sync my Palm Pilot with my computer at the Capitol every day. And I just thought, well, had I realized, you know, I'm not as technologically advanced as some of the young new people coming into the legislature, that maybe I would have made the choice to get a BlackBerry type system instead, even though it would have cost me a little bit more per month. And maybe if we did it together, even though we were paying for it ourselves or out of our campaign funds, we could get a better rate, or if we piggybacked on state government for some of these things.
I think there is an interest. We used to have a Senate Information System Committee, and I think there's an interest in reviving it. It doesn't necessarily have to be just the members of this budget division, because I think this applies to I think if any people are tech savvy or want to be part of it. So I think we're going to have discussions on that because, and it should include the staff too, because they're affected by the decisions we make, not just the Senate members. So I think we're trying to decide what it should look like and, you know, how we should do it. But I think to the extent that people want to be involved with it, there will be that opportunity to do so. So, rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The one of the things that is going on, I think the committee you're talking about is the technology committee, which kind of has gone in and out of activity. I don't think it's gone in and out of existence, but just in and out of activity.
Same difference.
One of the things is that, and my LA is going to be participating in that as well, is to do simultaneous minutes. I don't know if that's what you're doing here.
We tried, but, and it's not quite working at the moment.
Simultaneous minutes. So that the LAs will be bringing, and right now it's just pilot, bringing laptops to the committee for the record keeping so that there's...
They're not writing them up by hand
exactly,
and having to go and type them later.
Right. They're doing it almost as the meeting is going on. And then secondly, one of the things that I think is really interesting is a lot of us like to use legislative questionnaires. And they now have software, and my staff got trained on it yesterday or the day before to be able to put those questionnaires on our Senate websites to use the software to do that. And we won't have it for like another week, I guess, the ability to do it, although Schaefer Pellinen is trained on it now. But the other thing is, and I think a number of us send out weekly email updates and keep that, and what that software will also let us do is like a question of the week, which is what I'm going to do, in my email update to be able to have a link to a question of the week for, you know, if it's going to be some big issue maybe that we've discussed or... controversy. There will be a few controversial things coming up shortly, and you can get almost immediate feedback, at least from the
people on your e-letter.
The people on your e-letter, and I think we are. It might be kind of bumping along, but I think that's. That's very interesting. And also in the Governing Magazine this past month, they had a whole article about legislators should wake up to blogging and suggested some sites to get a feel for legislatures that involve an active blogging with their constituents. And the one that was the most... interesting and thorough was in the Utah State Senate that had been set up by the Republican caucus there. It was just fascinating. And then they also had, the other caucuses had one too, but the major push for it came there. And it's just people expressing their opinions all over the place. And it was really, I spent 20 minutes reading about the Utah legislature online or, you know, watching it. And I'm not a particular fan of blogging because I think it's often uninformed opinions by people who only have an axe to grind.
Yeah.
But I'm changing my mind on that. And I'm beginning to find it. I don't know that I'm actually going to do it yet, because it is a time commitment if you're going to do it regularly. But I'd encourage you to look up that site on that and just see what they do. But this thing about having a legislative questionnaire online and or a question of the week or on your e-letters, I think
that's a nice idea.
That's interesting.
Then a way that people
user-friendly,
can respond and it can be tabulated.
Yes, user-friendly technology for either our staffs or ourselves.
Okay, anything else to go on? Sarah Roblin.
Thank you. As long as we are talking about employee health insurance costs, and I'm somewhat surprised to hear we have an anticipated 10% increase in the cost, because I thought I had just read an article that said we actually had a surplus of funds, and there was either going to be some kind of bump back to the state and to the employees during the month of January of this year from last year. And I'm just wondering what happened that all
of a sudden.
The
governor proposed that, yeah. Mr. Wendy?
Yes. Yeah, you're correct. There was a CGIP premium holiday, which happened in early December. And there was about, I think, a total cost that they sent out was $19.9 million, and the average savings to employees was $54. And it was basically people that saw the savings in their check were those that had the dependent coverage. If you were single and had the 100% employer paid, there wasn't any money going back. And so the amount of money going back to employees was about $2.65 million. And then going back to state agencies was about a little over $17 million.
So you already got your Christmas present. So
yeah.
Good. Okay. Anything else? Okay. For those who came in after the start of the meeting, of course, we meet Mondays and Wednesday afternoons. Next Monday, of course, is a holiday, so the Senate there will be more committee meetings. Next Wednesday, 1 week from today, the governor will have his State of the State address. It's my anticipation that they only usually last about a half an hour to an hour at most, and then about 30 minutes after the end of the governor's address, we'll meet, and the purpose is to review the plans for improvements to the Capitol building, particularly the ductwork, the wiring stuff, and then we'll actually go downstairs to the basement to take a look at some of this very antiquated stuff that's down there that, you know, we would be quite surprised if we've never seen it down there. So,
Mr. Chairman. And the commissioner's gone, but Representative Rhodes is here. I just heard a rumor that there wasn't going to be a push to start any capital improvement until after the 2008 Republican convention, because the governor doesn't want the Capitol complex torn up.
I'm looking at a sneak preview, but I think that'll be part of the presentation next week, Mr. Rhodes.
Right.
Is that,
yeah.
Pleasure to be here. Just to let you
notify yourself. Yeah.
Oh, I'm Jim Rhodes, Department of Administration and Office of Enterprise Technology. If you're going to do any physical changes to the Capitol, we thought that the best time to start would be after the day after the convention ends, because we don't want to have the Capitol torn up when we have all these visitors from all over the world, actually.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Rhodes, does that mean there'll be a delay in the process, or will we have to do the plans still have to be drawn up and the architectural designs and all that?
Senator Pappas, members of the committee, that's right. There's all the other stuff has to be done anyway before they actually start digging a hole.
Yeah.
I had a look at the blueprints in December, and what we may have to do is the same thing, just come in this room and just spread them all out on the table here, and we'll just have to gather around. You'll see an idea of what's being proposed, and you'll get it all next week. But I'm just giving you a teaser as to what we're going
to
be looking at next week. So. Anything else? Senator Rest.
One of the things that probably will happen before that, however, is the plans to make to have a handicapped accessible bathroom on the second floor outside of the chamber. That work will at least tentatively is scheduled to happen, and Senator Roebling and I and Senator Mua were on that small committee, mm-hmm. Starting right at the interim and finish then.
Sure. Why not?
Anything further? Well, thank you, and we'll see you at session tomorrow, and then have a good weekend. Thanks a lot. Mission adjourned. Okay.